Hi, it's Mark Zinkowitz, and I am still here in Greenville, South Carolina, for the annual meeting of the National Association of Plant Breeders. Boris Aladasi is a PhD student in plant breeding with a statistics minor at Iowa State University. He's currently working on two research projects. He'll tell us about them as well as why the Borlaug Scholarship is so valuable. We also sat down with his mentor, Alan Van Dynes of the University of California, Davis. Together, they talked a little bit about the mentorship process and why it helps students so much. Enjoy our chat.
And I'm currently studying at Iowa State University. My major is plant breeding with a minor in statistics. And I'm working in a quantitative genetics and maize breeding lab with Dr. Jamin Yeo. I'm working on two projects currently. The first project is about using UAV-based high throughput phenotyping, crop growth modeling, and also GWAS to study the dynamics of sorghum plant high genetics. And the second project is on using genomic and transcriptomic analysis to dissect the genetic control of the maize leaf angle.
So what made you want to study this using UAVs to study, you know, the canopy of the crop? What was the motivation behind that really interested you in it?
Yeah, so that's a very good question. So in the past, we've really done a lot understanding how plant height is controlled by the genes. And we found several genes that control plant height, but most of this study actually look at the final height of the plant at the end of the season. But we know that plant height is a dynamic trait. It changes throughout the season. And we know that early on, there are already some genes that are controlling plant height, and the effects could be changing throughout the season. So we want to zoom in and see how are these genes changing throughout the season, number one. And if are there some early gene that we are not detecting when we only focus on the final height as well? So those are the questions we are trying to answer.
And so this research, what difference could it make in the future to, say, people at the consumer level, people at the grocery store? What could it ultimately translate into for them?
So these days, we are talking about pushing the planting quite early. We want the farmers to get the seed in ground as early as possible. And to do that, we have a challenge, especially in the Midwest where I'm studying, because they have to deal with tolerance to cold stress. Because we are still in the spring, there could still be some, the soil could still be very cold. So now we are seeing if we can get genotypes that are very vigorous, yeah, and then they can grow very fast, they could be able to withstand that cold. And for us to do that, we need to know the genes that control that vigor, that height at early stage. If we know those genes, then we can use it for our purpose to bring all the good genes into a single genotype that will give them a very good vigor at early stage in the season. So that will benefit the farmers. They'll be able to plant early, and then that can increase the yield in the end.
Now, we're here at NAPB in Greenville, South Carolina. Yeah. NAPB being the National Association of Plant Breeders. What got you interested in plant breeding growing up in West Africa, for example, as a child? Was there something that happened to you or an experience you had that really sort of lit that fire and got you really interested in doing this as a career?
First, I did my bachelor in natural resource management. And most of my experience was about going to the forests and working with communities. And when I finished my bachelor, I worked as a research assistant junior in the laboratory of applied ecology. And during one ethnobotanical survey, I happened to meet this farmer, a smallholder farmer. He didn't have much means, and he had planted cowpeas that were being destroyed by aphids. And unfortunately, he didn't have enough money to buy insecticide to control this. So when I went back and read, I realized there was a very poor access to improved cultivar that could have had the resistance, the genetic resistance to the aphids. So that really touched me, and I felt the need to contribute. How could I help and help to develop pest and disease-resistant cultivars for the local farmers in my country? So the following year, I saw some scholarship that were being advertised in plant breeding. So I applied for it, and I got accepted. And that took me to Makerere University in Uganda, where I did my master's in plant breeding and seed system. So that's how I got interested in plant breeding, just to be able to help the local farmers in my country.
So in the future, where do you, after you finished your grad studies, and what does the future hold for you? What are you interested in doing?
So after finishing my grad studies, I still have the same goal, helping the farmers. So my goal is to get on an interdisciplinary team where I can contribute myself as a plant breeder or quantitative geneticist, and we can be able to develop improved cultivars for the farmers that will help them to control, let's say, disease and pests, and as well as increasing the yield. And ultimately, that helps us to fight the hunger that is a major issue in most part of the world.
Studying abroad, I did an interview with a George Washington Carver scholar this morning, okay, who's talking about some of the challenges of studying abroad. She's on the grad student committee for NAPB. So she works with other grad students to help them out, and she's involved in outreach. And for you studying abroad, I imagine you must have family back in West Africa. Coming to the United States to study, I'm just interested, what personal challenges did that pose for you, leaving West Africa, coming to the United States, living here, working here, studying here? I imagine there must have been, you know, an adjustment period, and you must have, you know, missed things that you know, happening with your family back in West Africa. And what's that experience been like for you?
Yeah, definitely being a foreigner, or I mean, an international student, it always comes with some challenges. Because we are leaving our family back. So all I can do is just to talk to them on the phone. So I miss seeing them physically. And also in terms of food. So we come to a very different culture, and it's not always easy to find exactly the type of food that we are used to. So we have to adapt to that. And there is also something called a culture shock. So after coming, I remember myself, I was not familiar with the concept of personal space. So after getting to the US, I remember I was attending an event, and we have to sit and leave an empty seat between us, which I was not used to. So I had to ask, what is this? And then they explained, okay, I have to always leave a personal space. But the good thing is that that did not prevent me from interacting with people, and I was still able to blend into the community. And at this point, I've adjusted, and when I get a chance, I do go back home to visit my family. One thing that I really appreciate studying at in the US is that the universities allows you to take courses in any department that you want, which is not common where I come from. So when I registered under a certain college, I can only take classes within that college. But at Iowa State, I was able to take courses from the computer science department. I was able to take courses from the statistics department. And these were skills that I always wanted to gain. I wanted to acquire those skills, and I was able to do that here. So that's on a positive side.
Like, what in terms of skills, what makes a good plant breeder? Like, being a graduate student, there's Borlaug scholars here, and we'll talk about the Borlaug scholarship in a minute. But there's scholars here who are undergrads. What's your advice to them on, like, what makes a good plant breeder? How can they be successful doing this? If you had to pick maybe one or two major skills, what would you say those are?
I think communication is a very key skill, because as a plant breeder, we are developing products for the farmers or let's say processors. We have a target population in mind that we are developing this product for. So we need to be able to communicate effectively with this end user of our product to know the needs that they have. Yeah, because sometimes we tend to just focus on the science, trying to discover this and so, and at the end of the day, the question is, how is this going to be useful to the end user? So I think communication skill is number one, first with your boss, with anyone, but also with the end user. And that also helps you to be able to explain the science that you are doing in very simple terms, so that the end user can understand what you are doing. And for someone undergrad going into a grad school plant breeding, I will highly recommend them to gain very early on some quantitative skills, because plant breeding, as many would call it, is a numbers game. And it comes with collecting much data, analyzing the data, and interpreting the data. So if they are able to get those skills very early on, that should be good. And since we are moving now into the era of machine learning and AI, programming skill comes along with that.
Yeah, AI is something people are talking a lot about now. Things like ChatGTP, like the general public's really interested in it. There's a lot of people are worried about how fast it's going to progress, and oh boy, and how in your discipline, doing what you're doing in plant breeding, how quickly do you think AI and machine learning is going to really change things?
For me, I'm not worried. I see AI as a good product that is a tool, is a new tool that I, as a plant breeder, I will just put in my box and then I'm able to use it. Because AI is helping me to solve some problems in a very more efficient way compared to before. So in terms of AI, things are gonna change. So for example, I'm already using AI in my project, because my project, I'm using UAV, the drones, to take images of the field. And then the AI is helping me to do the classification of these images and be able to extract plant height data from images instead of me going to the field and using a ruler to measure it manually. And by doing so, if I'm able to automate this process, I'm able to extract plant height data on a very large scale in a short amount of time compared to how I would have done it if I was doing it manually.
So it makes things a lot easier, in other words.
Yes, it makes it easier, and it also helps you to gain time, and then you are able to focus on more important questions and things that are on a lower level. You can give it to the AI, automate the pipeline, and it runs for you.
So for you, Boris, I'm curious, like the Borlaug Scholarship, you're here as a Borlaug Scholar. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And this is why I'm glad Alan is here. You can both kind of speak to this, is the value that the Borlaug Scholarship has for someone like you. Can you speak to why this scholarship is important for you in particular? And then after that, we can talk a little bit about why it's important to grad students in general. But for you, why is this scholarship so valuable?
I will start by the name of the scholarship itself. So it's named after Dr. Norman Borlaug. And everyone knows him, how his contribution has really helped to save many lives from starvation. So for me, it is an honor to be part of a scholarship named after him. But now, for me personally, the scholarship is a great opportunity where, first of all, we are part of a cohort of like-minded students and future leaders of our field, and we can grow together. The scholarship also offers us a one-on-one mentorship, which is very critical, because as a graduate student, I will graduate, get on the job market, start my career, and I wouldn't want to make some mistakes. that someone has already made and learned from. So if I can get a mentor who already went through that path and is able to guide me and help me to avoid those mistakes, then I will experience more success in my career.
Yeah, that's a good point, Alan, is, you know, someone like you who is very experienced and, like Boris says, has maybe made some of those mistakes that you can teach someone like him about. I imagine that's a big part of this is, you know, being that mentor and saying, hey, here's maybe some mistakes I've made in the past and here's how I, you know, handled that. I imagine that's a big part of the process, I would think.
I think that's where, but thanks for pointing out that I've made a lot of mistakes. But no, we call that experience. But you're absolutely right, Boris. So there's that component as well. And I think you're thinking of it also on maybe a technical scale. Mm-hmm. But a big part of mentorship, and it's a two-way process we learn as well, is also on, like I said, is making sure you know you have perhaps the most information you need mm-hmm. for the next step in your career. You know, should that be academia? Should it be a big company, small company? Mm-hmm. Advantages, disadvantages, you know, and how to sort that out and what's best for you. So I would say also the guidance at that level as well. And, you know, I've not got mentors now for several years, and we stay in contact. We meet each other at different conferences, and we stay in touch. So it's twofold. It's not only technical. It's like we want to make sure you have every chance whatsoever to be the future leaders like you mentioned. And that's the goal of the program.
Now, Boris was telling me he studies UAVs, machine learning, AI, to study the canopy of the crops. So, you know, you're flying UAVs over, looking at the crop, and, you know, this really cutting edge technology. And for you, Alan, the kind of work that Boris is doing, why is that so important nowadays? Does that impact someone like you? I know, like you mentioned, you're harvesting carrots in the coming days. Is this a technology that, you know, in the future could potentially help you in your work, for example?
Yeah, and we're using similar technology even for carrots, actually. We're looking for drought tolerance, and it turns out you can get a signal from the tops as well. But the, you know, breeders are always challenged with time. And the main goal for breeding is genetic gain. So how much can we improve something over, you know, in the shortest possible time? So anything we can do to to reduce that time or to increase genetic gain is really the name of the game. But the hardest part I think about breeders is about breeding is that, you know, I look at, you know, where I was when I was a graduate student in technologies that I had at hand, and is to use the right tool at the right time. And maybe as important, not to use a tool at the wrong time, right? It's so easy to get, seduced by all the coolest and greatest technology, but it may not be the right thing, you know, for your particular situation. So that's really the hardest part is how do I make sense or even understand all the possible technologies that I have at my hand, you know, and when to use them. So that's where I think it's an ongoing conversation with going to these meetings. You see what's out there, how people are using things, and you need to decide, you know, what's best for you, for your crop.
Well, look, scholarship, Alan, you know, like you say, a big part of this is mentoring people. You know, there's a soft skills workshop that Boris is taking part in today. And Alan, what would you say, like, for people like Boris, like, you know, in terms of being a successful plant breeder and being successful in this business, basically, and what is that? The top skill that you feel can really help people like Boris to learn how to be a good, successful plant breeder?
Well, there's obviously the technical stuff, the knowledge, quantitative genetics. You have to be sound, you know, in those, say, core plant breeding knowledge bases, and then you're getting the experience. But as far as, say, to me, one of the top skills or importance in a very complex field is exactly what we're doing here today, is the network. You know, don't be scared to ask questions for the exact same reason you said, Boris. You know, you don't have to make all the mistakes. You know, let somebody tell you, you know, this might work better for you and things like that. So the network, I think, is a lot of times is underestimated how important it is to participate in meetings like this. Meet your peers, both at your own level, but at higher level, even lower level, continue to give back as well. you know, on the, you know, for people that are just going through as well. So the network is critical, and that's really what the Borlaugs College is about, is building that network.
How can people get involved, Alan, in Borlaug Scholarship, either as a sponsor or finding out more about it, maybe to apply next year? How can people get the info?
Well, we're on, so the National Association of Plant Breeders has a website. It's actually just a brand new face of it this year. So plantbreeding.org. And if you look under scholarships, we're right there. And then it talks about the program, how to sponsor, you know, how to contact the students even, you know, who the past students were and committee members and so on.
For more great podcasts and videos and stories as well from this year's NAPB meeting in Greenville, visit seedworld.com. Have a great day.